It's the 19th, and spring break starts at the end of this week. We have a whole week to spend catching up. Those of you who haven't turned your assignments, I know it's part of the religion for some of you to not turn in your assignments. But chapter 6 is due on Thursday, so those are the calculations that we've already done on the exam. Chapter 5, you haven't turned that in. That's fine. That's good stuff. It's easy. It's not hard to do. So do that. And we're continuing with chapter 17. And I was trying to find my handouts, but I couldn't find them. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? I have a bad joke. I have lots of bad jokes. Nobody? All right, so you're tired of the bar jokes? Let's transition out of the bar jokes into the... Battle of the Sexes. Battle of the Sexes. We call those dumb woman and dumb guy jokes. We want to insult everybody, not just one. So this is a bar joke that transitions into the Battle of the Sexes jokes. So this guy walks into a bar. Have you heard this one before?
Not yet.
And he's really sad. And the bartender says, "Hey, buddy, what's wrong? Why are you so sad?" And the guy says, "Oh, man, my wife and I had a terrible knockdown, drag-out fight, and she told me she wasn't going to talk to me for a whole month." And the bartender said, "That's so sad." The guy says, "Yeah, the month is up tonight." So you see, the month is over, and so he's sad. Well, the battle of sexes, I mean, there's nothing funnier than the difference between men and women. There really is nothing. I mean, they're just the best jokes, I think. I think, personally, the best jokes are about men and women because how did we get together is what I want to know. How does the species keep surviving? It's got to be the hormones. People say, "What's your key to a long..." I've been married 25 years, almost 25 years now. People say, "What's the key to a long-lasting marriage?" No. Do everything your wife tells you to do, and don't keep any loaded firearms in the house, because I'd be dead by now. And then they say, "Well, what's the key to a happy marriage?" And I go, "I don't know, same-sex marriage? Marry somebody of your own sex, you know, don't marry the opposite sex." Right, ask somebody, "Have you met anybody who married a happy..." No, it's the misery. It's the wonderful misery. Okay, so one, get your calculators out, get your handouts from last week, because now we're going to compute the more ratios. We took a look at the common stock ratios, which, do you have it from last week? Your handouts? Okay, get it out. Because the common stock ratios, that was mostly review. Now we're going to take a look at profitability ratios. So you need to have out the handouts for Walgreens. And let me see, why don't I get those things on the screen over here? So Walgreens, where is it? The balance sheet, open that up in a new tab. And then the income statement, open that up in a new tab. And let's see, I know, accounting is very boring, isn't it? Open that up in a new tab. Okay, here we go. So we got the balance sheet and the income statement. All right, so these, really, folks, these ratios are not hard to do. The heavy lifting in the calculations was chapter 6, and we'll go over it again. When we come back, we're going to have an exam. Yes? I gave it to you. I didn't hand you out one? I gave you your, oh well. I didn't give you this thing. Okay.
Oh well.
Here you go. Yeah, I know. Well, that's what you get for not being here. Okay. And William, you need one of these too. So the common stock are pretty easy. We've already done them with this review. Now we're going to get into more. We're going to get into ones that we have not taken a look at: the profitability, the liquidity, the inventory and turnover ratios, and the what's the other one? I'm forgetting. It's like, anyway, profitability ratios. These are especially the net profit margin, the return on assets, and the return on equity are viewed quite a bit. They're talked about quite a bit. Not as much as the PE, the price to earnings ratio is the most popular one. But profitability ratios are ratios that measures a firm's returns by relating profits to sales. profits to assets, profits to equity. And one you hear quite a bit about is the net profit margin, also called the after-tax profit margin. But there's also gross margin, operating margin, return on assets, and return on equity. And they allow them you to measure the ability of a firm to earn an adequate return on their sales, total assets, and invested capital. So let's take a look at the net profit margin. The net profit margin, and again, if you look at the handout, all the ratios are on one page, and then the balance sheet and the income statement are there. We're not going to use any numbers from the cash flows, the statement of cash flows. But net profit margin is equal to net income over total revenue. So can you find net income, net profit margin? Can you, where would that be? Net income. Where would you find net income? On the balance sheet or the income statement? And net income is? Where is it? Where is it? Top or the bottom?
Bottom.
Net income is the bottom line number. Look at the income statement. What does it say? At the bottom. Look at the ink. Do you have it? You were here. Were you here last week? Oh, you weren't here either. See, what is it? This is part of your religion. You don't show up the day after an exam, right? That's part of the religion, is not to show up the day after an exam. That's a bad religion, folks. It's not a good religion. But you weren't here either, right? Of course. Of course. And you didn't tell everybody to leave the answers back to the engineer, please. You don't have yours either? Come on, folks. This is college. I know I try to treat you friendly and everything, but you gotta get organized. Were you here? Oh, okay. So what is that religion name? The one that where you don't show up the day after an exam?
Flacker
religion? Is that what's the name of it?
Yeah, I was sick.
You were sick? The exam was bad, huh? It was a bad exam. Yeah, it made you sick. Okay, so net income, what do you see at the bottom of the page? What does it say? Yes, it says the bottom line, right? You'll hear people say, what's the bottom line? Well, they're talking about the net income. And then total revenue is called the, look at the top.
Top line.
So when you were doing the Chapter 5 earnings call assignment, you'll often hear the CFO, the CEO talk about top line number, bottom line number. You understand? We went over the income statement, and I know all of you who weren't here, you did that over the weekend because you had plenty of time to study, and everything's on the website, right? Nod your head yes. Make me feel better. Okay. The income statement starts with the top line number, the total revenue. Then we take out the cost of goods sold. Then we take out the sales general and administrative expenses. Then we take out earnings. I'm sorry, take out interest. Then we take out all the other things that we have to pay. Taxes, and then we're left with the bottom line number, which how much money did we actually make. So, what was the net income? Who said it? 2127.
Right.
Remember that there's another six zeros after that, because that's 2,127,000,000, so you don't need all the zeros. And what's the top line number? Anybody in the cheap seats? 71,633. For 2012, everybody say it?
Yeah?
Okay, great. So, divide those two numbers. This is tough. You can do it.
0.029 80.
So 2.98%, you could write it either way. So there, let me just make sure I got my cheat sheet here. I already did these. So, is that good? A net profit margin? 2.98%? 2.98%? Is that good? Net profit margin? Is that a bad profit margin?
Yeah.
I don't know. What you have to do is take a look at their competitors. You have to look at the industry itself and then take a look at their competitors. So who's the competitors for Walgreens?
CVS.
Wrong Aid. But at the same time, who else is getting into the act?
Walmart,
Target, right? So Ralph's and Vons now have pharmacies. So yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right, you go in there and they have pharmacies.
So it's a little fuzzy, isn't it? So you have to take a look at their competitors, and you have to then take a look at the other people who are sort of horning into the act. And I will tell you that this is typical for a high-volume, low-margin type of business, such as a grocery. They don't make a whole lot of money on that formula they sell, but they sell it to you every week. You understand?
Exactly.
Instead of making a dollar, they're making a few pennies, but they do that 52 times of the year, and so they have a high volume, but a low margin. And what we do next is we say, okay, well, what are they reporting? What are they reporting on? We forgot to take a look at how are doing. I'm sorry, it's been a crazy this morning. So let's go to our website and see how we're doing. A little bit down here. Come on. Oh, Yahoo! Have you seen the new Yahoo webpage? It's horrible. It's really, really bad. It goes on forever. It doesn't stop. And for some reason, they think that's cool. They think that is actually cool. It's really, that's horrible. It's just horrible. Okay, so let's do my sign in. Don't you just love the internet? Don't you just love it? One of these days, the whole thing's going to crash down. What? The whole thing's going to crash down, and we're going to be left with nothing. Okay. Hey, 3.5%? Not bad. Not bad at all.
Did
we make $3,400? That's our profit. As we started with $100,000 and we're up $3,492.85. So let's take a look at Walgreens. And WAG. I love that. I love her symbol, WAG. And where do we find the net profit margin? Well, it depends on which one you're playing with, but on Yahoo, you find it under Key Statistics. And here we see profit margin. No, I'm sorry. Wow, wait a minute. That jumped up. Oh, that's right. They just announced some really good earnings. Look, just a couple of weeks ago, the profit margin, the net profit margin, was 2.81%. But they just announced, and their stock price jumped, they just announced just a few days ago, just last week sometime, that they had a great quarter. And so you say, wait a minute, how come this is 5.92? Do you see that number there, TTM?
Yeah.
That stands for trailing 12 months. When you look at the income statement, what's the date on the income statement?
August 30th.
August. Come on, look up. Look at the income statement. Come on, wake up. Look, what does it say?
August 30th,
right? August 31st. So what we're looking at is the data from August 31st, 2011 to August 30th, well, actually, September 1st, 2011 to August 31st, 2012. And what Yahoo is saying, no. We're looking at the latest quarter and going back 12 months.
Okay.
From the latest quarter. So if we go over here, it's probably not even on the website yet. Let's take a look at their income statement. So this is what we're looking at right here. See, the default is annual. So that's what should be in your hot little hands. But when we go to quarterly data, yeah, see, they don't have the data up for the current quarter. But here, this is they're showing you December, September, June, March. Wait a minute, they must have changed their
click on wait.
Did I click on wait? No, wait. Annual data is August. Oh! I got the wrong company. WAG. Okay, well, there we go. Let's go look at the income statement, and you see August 30th, and then we go to quarterly data. Right, exactly. They don't have it up yet. They don't. Pretty soon, eventually, this will show up as the end of February. This will show up at the end of February. Oh, wait, is that right? December, January, February, right. So this will show up at the end of February. It hasn't shown up yet, but eventually it will. And so what they're doing when they say TTM is they're taking this next quarter that will show up here eventually, and then they're going back 12 months. And that's why it differs from the one we computed. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Add your head yet? Okay, good. All right, let's continue.
What does it differ by?
Was it different by? Oh, that's right. Let's take a look. Key statistics. Oh, no. That's what I... Yeah. Why didn't anybody tell me that? This is what it was.
So, actually, it doesn't make sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
2.81%. That's what it was a few weeks ago when I put this all together. So the reason doesn't match ours is because they're going back 12 months from... Wait a minute, I'm getting confused. What's the earnings call? When is their next earnings? Let's take a look at their headlines. I know their stock price just jumped. So, Walgreens rises on unusually high volume. Tuesday movers. Walgreens offers surprises on twofold. Let's take a look at when their next earnings call is. Ah, see, they haven't. I apologize. Okay, I just assumed. I assumed that they had come, that the earnings call had come up yet, but it hasn't happened yet. So here, you want to watch it. At the end of, when's the 25th? Next Monday? Yeah, next Monday is the 25th. So on the 25th, if you haven't done the assignment for Chapter 5 yet, the earnings call, you can do an earnings call for Walgreens, and you can listen to them. Now, supposedly, look, they're up 4.5%, almost 5% just today. So everyone's expecting them to really go gangbusters. They're expecting their earnings, which haven't been announced yet, but you see the headline saying, oh, Walmart's going to do really well. That's all conjecture. Walmart hasn't said that yet. They're required by law to wait until they announce an earnings, and either before or after the market opens, before the market opens or after the market closes, they will then announce the earnings or shot out onto the internet, and people call in or go on online and listen to the CEO and the CFO and all the other people. So if you want to, check out their earnings call. And we might see this jump. We might see their net profit margin jump because they supposedly are having a bang-up quarter. Make sense? Am I going too fast? Am I losing you? Now, how do you find out when the earnings call is? What is this? I don't know. Oh, this is if I want to put it in my calendar. What you could do is go to Walgreens' website. Anybody having trouble finding the earnings call? Anybody having trouble finding them?
They're different than, I looked at something else, I think.
Well, if you...
Annual report?
Well, in this case, it won't be the annual one, because their year ends at the end of August. So this is their quarterly. This will be their 10-Q, not their 10-K. I know, it's 10-Q for quarterly, 10-K for annually. And so you go to their website, and somewhere on the website you'll find something about investor services. Where is it? Do you see it? Anybody see it?
Investor services, investor relations.
Investor relations, where is it? Investor relations. Here, do you see it? Is it too... Do you need to turn the lights out or something? Okay, Leo, P.O., would you please turn the lights down? On the right-hand side, down twice. Boom, boom. Okay. You see investor relations?
See.
So you click on investor relations, and here's news and events, company overview, and it's telling you about the information. Second quarter, now this is saying March 19th. That's today.
Oh, no. Perfecto.
That's probably why it jumped so high. Because you see, it started today. But you would see some, I'm confused.
Is this the webcast Q2F1?
But beginning at 8:30 a.m. Eastern, that was 5:30 in the morning today. You got to get up early to listen to them. Listen to it here, press release, downloadable presentation podcast. So you don't have to listen to it the day it happens to do the exercise. But it's good to listen to some of these. And that's what I wanted you to do in chapter 5. So Yahoo had it wrong. They're saying it's today and it already happened. And that's probably why the stock price...
So by listening to that, you're going to hear what their percentage was?
Yeah, you're going to hear all the good stuff or bad stuff or what happened. And if it's good stuff, they're going to try to act very serious and not try to get too excited. Yeah, professional. And if it's bad stuff, they're going to try to act, we're really turning around the company and we're looking for better things ahead. because they don't want you to run out the door of them. But here, this is where you listen to it, pre the press release. Let's see what they say. Compared with earnings. Oh, sorry. So this is good. Look, their earnings per share, 96 cents per share, as opposed to 88 per share a year ago. Record $1.2 billion of cash flow from operations. So things are looking pretty good for Walgreens, and we saw the stock jump. GAAP. Who are the accountants? Want to tell me what that means? Generally Accepted Accounting Principles. It used to be United States was the best in the world for, let's see, buys, holds, sales, takes, second quarter climbs for accounting. We used to have the best accounting standards in the world. Now, we're not the best anymore. We're still good, but there are other countries that have even stricter standards than we do. All right, so let's continue. Is that hard, though? Is it hard to do these calculations? Want to turn the lights back on? No, they're pretty darn easy. All right, so let's continue. Gross margin is the same idea, but instead of dividing net income by total revenue, we divide gross profit by total revenue. So, can you find the gross profit? Can you see where it is on the earnings statement? Where is it? Yeah, because what we do is we take net income, I'm sorry, total revenue, the top line number, and then subtract the cost of goods sold, the cost of the inventory that we bought from somebody else. We didn't make the Pampers. We didn't make the drugs. And so what is the gross profit for Walgreens?
$23.42.
And then we're going to divide that again by the total revenue, what our top line number is $71,633. And what do you get? You calculator fans? I got my cheat sheet. I won't tell you.
$0.2839,
or you could write it 28.39%. Again, is that good? Is that bad? Well, we have to take a look at our competitors and see how we're doing vis-a-vis them, how we're doing within the industry as a whole. Well, Yahoo does not report this one, but Yahoo does report the next one, and that's the operating margin or the operating ratio. Sorry, question? Am I going too quick? What?
Oh, that's okay. I just asked something.
All right. So the operating revenue is the income after we do what? Look at the income statement. What do they pull out? They took out what? What are the operating expenses? What do they call it? Research and development, SG&A. Remember I asked you in chapter 5? What is S? SA and O? SA and O. Because they use these terms. And when you're listening to the earnings calls, they'll say SA and O or SG&A and O expenses. And you go, what the hell is that? And so I asked you to go look that up. And some of you said, I can't do it. Especially the online ones. I can't find it. One guy sent me, he did SA and O expenses in Google. And it came back with my website. That was the only thing he could find. He said, you're the only one that said, no, you got to listen. They don't write it down. They just say it. You got to listen to it. He goes, you're the only one that did. I said, no. Yeah, because I'm the only one who puts it into writing. They will put sales, selling, general, and administrative costs. So we take the operating income. This is after we've taken out all paying for the employees, paying for the rent and the all that other stuff. And so what is the operating income on the income statement?
Three, four, six, four.
And then we divide that by the same total revenue, and we get 0. Come on, you got the calculator, right?
Four.
Get it out.
You're it.
Write it out. You got to be quick.
Yeah.
No, it's not 17%. That's a little too high. Yeah, that sounds about right. About 5%. Yeah, be careful. What do I got? 4.84. And then if we go back to Yahoo, we find Ender's Key Statistics that they came up with 4.78 because, again, they're using TTM, trailing 12 months. All right, piece of cake. And the rest of them are basically the same. So let's go through them a little quicker now. Oops. You guessed it. Yep, you guessed it. The higher the better. It varies greatly from industry to industry. So when we're looking at a specific company, we always need to look at its competitors within an industry. When we find a company that is atypical of its competitors in an industry, it doesn't necessarily mean jump up and down, yeah, that's where we're going to buy it, or no, that's where we're going to sell it. It's a signal for us that we need to do more investigative work. Make sense? Okay, now return on assets is one that is often, the next two, return on assets and return on equity, are very popular. This measures how profitable a company is relative to its total assets. Well, the net income, that comes from the income statement. But where does the total assets come from? Is that on the income statement? That's the balance sheet. So what we're now doing is we're relating how much our income is, our net income, to how much assets it took us to generate those income, that income. So can you find that income? That's on the income statement. What's the total assets? Where can you find? You have to find them on the balance sheet. Come on, you're going to have to do this on the exam and on the assignment, so just don't stand there and look at me like I'm from outer space. The net income is from which statement? The income statement. And we already know that's 2127. Where are the total assets? The balance sheet. And can you find them? If you can't, just go like this. Total assets, not current assets. 33462 sounds about right. Are you with me? Can you find them on the balance sheet? Okay, if you can't go like this, go like this. Go help. Did you find it? Okay, that's what we want to make sure. And I just see this look like you don't know what to think. So, return on assets looks at the amount of resources a company needs to support its operations. It reveals how effective the company is in generating profits from the assets it has available. The higher the number, the better. Very profitable, very popular ratio. And again, we have to look at our competitors. So what'd you get?
6.35%.
0.06. 3.5. So 6.35%. Is that what I got? That's a little hot. No, that's right. About 6.75%. And the next one is the same idea, but instead of looking at the total assets, what we're going to do is narrow it down. We're just going to look at the equity that the firm has. So we're going to exclude the debt. And so the return on assets looked at all the assets that we have at our disposal, whereas the return of equity on equity gets rid of the debt. Just looks at what part of the company that we own. So the net income is the same, 2127. But now we're dividing it by what is called total stockholders' equity. Well, wait a minute. Did you get that? Who? What did we get for total stockholders' equity? Did you find it? 18236 on the balance sheet. Because remember, the balance sheet, you guys have studied this balance sheet. I mean, you don't have to be an accountant, folks. But on the balance sheet, the assets are, it used to be, they would be landscape. But they're not that anymore. They go down. But the original balance sheet, the assets would be over here. And then the liabilities, and then the equity would be over here. And the formula was assets equals liability plus equity. And so the two numbers down here had to be the same. Well, now, since 1950s, what they've done now is they've turned them into portraits. So you see the assets, then the liabilities, and then the equity. So what's the number? 0.1166. So you see this is much higher. Why is this higher? Because what we're doing is we're ignoring the debt. Return on equity, because return on equity uses stockholders' equity instead of total assets, return on equity is sensitive to the amount of debt a company is carrying. Specifically, if a company carries a great amount of debt, return on equity will be much larger than the return on assets. And here's the idea. This is what you hear people say. You want to use other people's money, borrowed money, to make your money. What?
Other people's money.
And if you're a real estate investor, you're jumping up down and saying, that's how we live. That's how we live. And that's how you die, too, right? It's a dual-edged sword. You know, debt is great when things are going well. When things are not doing so well, what happens? You don't have to pay dividends. Companies do not have to pay dividends. They can slice their dividend tomorrow and say, sorry, we don't have the cash. But do they have to pay those interest payments?
Yeah.
You bet. You better pay your home loan, right? Or they come and take away your home. You better pay your debt payments, your bond interest payments, or else they haul you into bankruptcy court. Make sense? So you've got to have that balance. There are some people who say, load up on debt. And there are other companies, and Walgreens is one of them, that say, we don't want to have too much debt. And I'm that's the kind of company I love, is the company that doesn't like debt. But then you got to remember, every industry is different.
Okay? We figure out that out by the return on equity or the return on assets.
Well, you'll see if these two are widely disparate, and that's a pretty big jump, but that's not as big as some other companies. You should see the huge jump from other companies, because there are some other companies that this debt is their way of life. And it depends on the industry and it depends on the company. But
so the bigger the gap,
the more, if the bigger the gap, the more debt they're carrying. Yeah. Okay. And we're going to look at some more debt ratios.
So that 9%
would be better? I don't necessarily think so. I don't think so. No, as we'll see, Walgreens has very little debt. In fact, just a few years ago, they didn't have any. After the turmoil, 2008, 2009, interest rates plummeted. And so companies, if you look at, can you see it? Do they still have the zero? Long-term debt? Where is the balance sheet? Long-term debt? No. Just a few years ago, before 2010, 2009, they had no debt, no long-term debt, which is very unusual for a company the size of Walgreens. And that, I thought, that's a company after my own heart. And then in 2009 and 10, interest rates went to almost zero, right, for the government and very little for companies. So they figured, hey, Fred, what do you think we should do? I don't know. Let's borrow some money and expand. It's so cheap now. Okay, we'll do that. That's what they did.
So that's why a Walgreens popped up on every corner.
Yeah, they've really been aggressive the last few years. And so far, it just looks like, we'll see next, or today, they already did. It already, they announced earnings and they said, look, you know, record earnings, we're doing great.
So I know they're at $4.17 billion in debt.
Yeah, but look how much assets they have.
Right.
Yeah. They use that debt to expand, but where do you see how many times? You're going to wait. Hang on a minute. It's okay. It's good. There's a good questions, but let's come back to them. All right, so those are the profitability ratios. Now let's take a look at the liquidity ratios. Liquidity is a measure of can we make our debt payments? Can we make payroll? Can we pay our suppliers in the short term? The liquidity ratios are concerned with the firm's ability to meet its day-to-day operating expenses, and satisfy its short-term obligations as they come due. Now, exactly. Current assets. We're going to see that we look at the current ratio. Net working capital is the only one that really isn't a ratio. It's actually an absolute number. And then the acid test. What a great name, acid test. So let's take a look at the next one. The current ratio is a very popular ratio. What we do is we take current assets, and you accountants, what does current mean?
One year,
exactly. In accounting, they use the word current for anything that's going to last 1 year or less, or less than 1 year. So what we do is we take our current assets and we divide them by our current liabilities. Yes, Oscar?
We use our total current assets for this?
Yes, use total current assets. Good question. So what did I put a little AKA next to it?
Yes.
I said AKA current assets. Right. Okay. So can you find the current assets on the balance sheet? What are they? $10,760. Yeah, everybody see that? All right. How much of that is cash? Well, it should be on there. So they got $2 billion in cash sitting in the bank account. Right? What? Oh, is it safe? I think it's 1297. I'm sorry, I thought you said 1927. Dyslexia. Did you hear about the dyslexic?
No.
The dyslexic, insomniac, agnostic? The dyslexic, insomniac, agnostic. He stays awake all night wondering whether or not there is a dog. Okay, insomniac? Stays awake all night. Agnostic? You don't know what that means? That's somebody who questions God. See, atheist is somebody who doesn't believe in God. But agnostic is somebody who questions the existence of God. Agnostic. Agnostic. And of course, then dyslexic switches things around. So he wonders, I wonder if this is a dog or not. All right. So what are the current liabilities?
8-7-2-2.
And so these are the debts that Walgreens has to pay within a year. So take the current liabilities and divide it by, I'm sorry, current assets divided by the current liabilities, and what do we got?
1.233.
Anything above 1 is generally considered acceptable. You've got to look at the individual companies and industries. But if your current assets equal or exceed your current liabilities, you should be able to satisfy your short-term obligations without any problems, right? You got enough current assets, cash and other things that are close to assets, to pay off any payroll that's coming due or rent that's coming due or insurance payments that are coming due. You with me? All right, now, the next one is the only one that's really not a ratio. What this is, the net working capital, is the current ratio in absolute dollar form. So we take the current assets and we subtract the current liabilities. You see now, current liability. So now what you've done is you've taken it from a ratio and turned it into an absolute number. Take 10760 minus 8722 and you get 2038. So we have $2 billion of excess current assets over the current liabilities. If the number's positive, then of course we'll be above 1. Because if it's 0, that means it is 1. You know, the two numbers are the same. It's just turning it into an absolute number. If it's negative, it means the numerator is smaller than the denominator. So it's a way of looking at the number in an absolute fashion. Did I lose you on that?
No.
Okay. You got to ask questions. All right. And then the last one. And then, by the way, this is not, you don't hear that many people talking about it. What's his face? Good old Ben Graham. He talks about the net working capital. He likes to know how much cash you got in hands. And then the next one is the acid test. What a great name, isn't it? The acid test ratio. Well, this is the same as the current ratio, except what they do is they pull out the inventory. So there's a couple different ways you can calculate it. You can take the current assets, and this is easier, I think, and subtract liabilities. Not liabilities, what did I say? Inventory. Inventory. I'm sorry. Or you can do what I did up here. Cash plus accounts receivable, which I think Yahoo calls net receivable, plus short-term investments, plus other current assets. So either way, I think the easier way is to take the current assets and just subtract out the inventory. Are you with me? You understand? And why would you subtract, and then you divide by the current liabilities. Why do you subtract out the inventory? Well, it depends on the industry, but inventory can go bad, right? It can spoil if it's food, right? It can become obsolete if they're computers or other kinds of electronic equipment. So what the asset test ratio is saying, it measures the ability of the company to meet its short-term obligations even if its current inventory becomes obsolete or undesirable and hence difficult or impossible to turn into cash. Anything greater than one is considered adequate. In some companies, in countries, I mean, that's not companies, industries, you don't even worry about that. Yes?
Exactly when other products are at, like, secondhand or not secondhand.
Overstock.
Yeah.
They get, yeah, this is,
what
you know.
What about Dev? Like Dev, you're still also.
Who?
What about Dev? Like
Dev? That's shrinkage.
Oh, okay.
That's called shrinkage. And companies do their best. Companies do their best to reduce shrinkage. How does most of it get stolen? Who steals most of it?
Employees.
They steal 75-80% of the stuff. Oh yeah, employees are the ones who steal most of the stuff. That's why the cameras are there for the client, for the customers. They're mostly there for the client, for the employees. Yes.
Current assets minus inventory.
Current assets minus inventory is easier to calculate. It's just two. You know, you just do one subtraction. Whereas here you have to add up all four. But they should be the same. Anybody do it yet? What'd you get? Four? Oh, whoa. I don't want that number yet. Give me the number. First do current assets minus inventory. 10,760 minus. You see the inventory, Joe?
Yeah.
7,036. Does everybody see that? Nod your head yes. Or you can add up these four. Cash, accounts receivable, short-term investments, other current assets. You could do that. Same difference. All right, so what do we get? Divided by 8,722. 3,724 divided by 8,722. And you find that that's actually quite low. Right? By normal standards, what did we get? 0.4269 or 42.69%. You don't usually, you get either way. And you say, well, wait a minute, that's not a good, what?
You can leave it just like that.
Either way, yeah, it doesn't matter. These ratios you can leave as decimals, or if you want it. But if you do move them to percents, do it right, okay? Okay, because people have to screw it up. They, you know, they take this number and they turn it into 70%. And you just want to go, oh, you're going to make me look really bad when you get out there. You're going to make me look really bad, so don't do that. So if you want to play it safe, just leave them as decimal numbers, and I'm very happy with that. Okay, so you say, whoa, Walgreens, that doesn't look too good. But is it likely that Walgreens inventory, I mean, do Pampers go obsolete? Do the formula? I mean, unless they sell, it'll eventually expire. But if you look at the expiration date, it's 2-3 years from now. And I guess they have some drugs that expire quickly, but most drugs expire, you know, in years, not a matter of days or months. So does Walmart really have to worry about having a low asset test ratio? Is it likely that their inventory is going to become obsolete anytime soon? No. Now, what about Dell? Or HP. Oh yeah, because 6 months, you know, computer 6 months. That's why Dell and now HP and the other computer companies, they only build the computer after you ordered it. I mean, they develop the computers for sale. You know, they say, okay, we have this type of computer, this type of computer, but they don't make any until the customers request the orders.
So does this current liability or the inventory also taking into account situations like disasters, the Hurricane Sandy,
that's one of the situations where, but that's unusual. But that, sure. What happens to a store when a tsunami comes in or a flood comes in? What happens?
Insurance, don't they?
Hopefully, you would hope they have insurance for situations like that. Yeah, but some don't. Some just say, "Oh, we'll self-insure." It happens so infrequently. And if you're in a floodplain, no insurance company's going to touch you. But, I mean, obviously, what?
You wouldn't build a store there.
What are you talking about? Have you ever seen Mission Valley? As you're driving along Interstate 8, next time I want you to do, you're driving around Interstate 8, look on your left and look on your right and realize that this used to be a big river, however many million years ago, and then every 100 years or so, it fills up, and we build an entire city. Now, before we were born, actually, we're not, you know, it's like 1970s, it used to be all, anybody remember? Dairy fields. Mission Valley used to be all dairy fields. No, you don't believe me. That's okay. All right. So before you were born, many of you. Okay, now let's take a look at the activity ratios. The activity ratios. These are financial ratios that are used to measure how well a firm is managing its assets. Accounts receivable turnover, inventory turnover, total asset turnover. Activity ratios measure a firm's ability to convert different accounts within their balance sheets into cash or sales. Companies will try to turn their production into cash or sales as fast as possible because this will generally lead to higher revenues, remembering that every industry is different, every company is different. So the accounts receivable turnover. Accounts receivable, for those of you who don't know, what are accounts receivable?
Money owed to you.
They're bills that we have sent to other people. Accounts receivable is money that is coming into us. We have basically said to our supplier, hey, you know, pay us. Here are the goods and services, pay us. And they say, okay, we'll get around to it. That's how businesses work. They extend credit to one another. The higher the number, the better. It indicates the return a company is getting from its investment in accounts receivable. By maintaining accounts receivable, firms are indirectly extending interest-free loans to their clients. A high ratio implies that the company operates either on a cash basis or its extension of credit and collection of accounts receivable is efficient. So in other words, it's churning that money. It's getting it quickly from their clients. A low ratio implies that the company should reassess its credit policies in order to ensure the timely correction of imparted credit, not earning interest for the firm. In other words, pay up, suckers. And you'll see a little thing that says 30 days net. You know, if you give it to us within 30 days or 45 days, yeah. Or that may just be how the industry operates. Anybody work in the defense industry? They've gotten better. The government takes 6-9 months to pay you. That's just the way they do things. Their systems are just very, very slow. So if you sell them an aircraft carrier or a jet fighter, you're going to get your money from Uncle Sam. You know, he does pay his debt. He just takes a long time. So these companies have huge, I mean, very low turnover for their accounts receivable. Huge time lags. So we won't do one of these. But total revenue, you can find that. Can you find total revenue? Where is it? Where is total revenue, people in cheap seats? Income statement, top line number, divided by the accounts receivable. So let's not do that for this guy. But let's do the next one, because the next one's kind of cool. This is inventory turnover. Inventory turnover. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take the total revenue again, which we used for the asset accounts receivable turnover, and this time divide it by the inventory. And this is kind of telling, because when we walk into a store, we think everything's been there for quite some time, unless you've worked in the store, and then you know all night long you're stocking shelves with Pampers, you're stocking shelves with formulas. You know, you go through the stuff very quickly. So what's our total revenue on the income statement? Everybody, total revenue. Where did you lose control? What is it? 71.633. And how much inventory does Walmart, Walgreens? 7036. How many times are they turning over their inventory every year? What'd you get? 10? 10.18. Is that the number I got? Yeah, 10.18. So what does that mean? That means about every 5-6 weeks, everything in that store has been replaced. It's been, yeah, it's been every year, 10 times, they go through the inventory in the store. Now, is that the way it looks to you when you walk in the store? Does it look like they're always moving stuff in and out?
Yeah, we go to Walmart at 1, like 2 in the morning, and then I pick an empty
man. Exactly, exactly. Of course, they don't let the customers see this.
Oh,
but
it's...
What?
Yeah.
Oh, the wall. If it's open 24 hours in the middle of the night. Okay. Yeah, of course.
They have pallets everywhere.
And so the same thing is true for a drugstore. If you ever work in a drugstore, you know that you go through formula and you go through diapers. They go. Well, I don't know about that. They're small, But I mean, Pampers are big. So cool. You understand?
Yep.
And if you're a company, what do you want to do? You want to get this number high. Why? Because it means you're selling more. The higher the number, the better. Because the time that an item spends in inventory, it's not earning you any money. And therein lies the conundrum. If you're a car dealership, for example, do you want to have a bunch of cars on the lot?
No.
Well, yes, you want people to come in, you want to have lots of selection, but no, because they ain't earning you any money on the lot. You understand? So it's one of those push-me-pull-you situations. You don't want to have a whole lot of cars because it's costing you to have them there, but if you don't have a whole lot of cars, people don't, exactly, you just want to have enough, right?
And you want the same cars.
The same car, the ones that sell. You want the ones that sell, right? And then they'll want one or two high-end, maybe a convertible or something like that. Not to sell it, just to show it off so people will come in and look at the $80,000 Corvette and then they'll buy an Impala, right? Or something like that, you know? That's the idea. You're with me, understand? Anybody work as a car salesperson? Any ever? Oh, it's a tough job. Pity the. I mean, they're scum, but that's okay. It's part of the. It just turns them into nasty people. I feel sorry for them because it is a very, very difficult job. You can't be a nice person. All right, total assets turnover is the same idea. We're going to take the total revenue. But this time we're going to divide it by the total assets that Walgreens has on its balance sheet. That's just, you're going to get a number that is pretty low because they have a lot of assets. And generally you want to have a higher number, the better, because this measures the firm's efficiency at using assets to support sales and revenue. Companies with low profit margins tend to have high asset turnover. Those with high profit margins tend to have low asset turnover. You're going to sell a whole lot of Pampers or a whole lot of milk or a whole lot of formula. You're going to make a low margin on that, high volume. And you're going to sell not too many cars, but you're going to make a higher a margin on that.
Otherwise, total current assets.
Total assets. So what is it, like 2 or something? I can take it, Yeah, 2.14 or something like that. It's not that high for Walgreens. Yeah. Okay, now the leverage ratios. Like I'm running out of room here. I want to get to these, because this is where we're going to answer your question here. What we're talking about. What kind of debt ratio do you want to have? And the leverage ratios have to do with debt. In the industry, we're going to come back to this idea, leverage is, when we talk about debt, you often hear people use the term leverage. And the idea is that you're using debt as a lever to lift, to do some of your work for you as other people's money. You're using the debt to, you're using borrowed money as a lever to increase your earnings. And you might hear about when one firm buys another firm using borrowed money, it's referred to as a leveraged buyout. They didn't use their own cash, they went out and borrowed the money to buy another firm. So it's called a leveraged buyout. And we have the debt-to-equity ratio times interest earned. This is the one you want to show, Rogelio. Total debt to total assets. And these should look familiar because this is the kind of stuff that we do in the financial planning class for individuals. The debt-to-equity ratio. Debt to equity ratio. We take our long-term debt and divide it by the total stockholders' equity. Now, we said this already. Stockholders' equity. It's hard to do two things at one time, talk and write something different. Okay, what's a long-term debt for Walgreens? It's really low for a company this big. Can you find long-term debt on the balance sheet? What is it? 4073. And divide that by the total stockholders' equity? 18236. And so what is the debt-to-equity ratio for Walgreens? 0.2233, about 22%. What do you think of that? Do you think that's high? Debt-to-equity ratio? It's relatively low. Anything between 30% and 50% is pretty good. Anybody remember the debt-to-equity ratio in the financial planning class?
What if it's lower than 20%?
Great. As, you know, it depends. It's a judgment call. I think that's great. If you have less debt, you don't have to worry about being hauled into bankruptcy court. Other more aggressive investors and business people will say, no, you don't understand. You want to have a lot of debt and use that debt to expand the business. And so you're using other people's money to make your money, and you're getting huge and becoming a monster company and the like. But there's that push and pull, that tug of war, because if you do that and you expand too quickly, you can be in a lot of trouble if there's a downturn or if interest rates rise or whatever. Are you with me? Understand? So debt, you know, it can help you, but can also bite your arm off. We learned that in the credit card and the home. That's what happened a few years ago. Do you remember? With housing prices going up and up and up. Go ahead, borrow $500,000. Don't worry. Your house is going to be worth $800,000 2 years from now. Uh-oh. Now it's worth $250,000. If you're lucky. Yeah. Okay, so the next one. Everybody understand that? Okay, anyway. See, I say the lower the better, but other people say, no, you don't understand. Now, here's the one that should satisfy times. This is the one that should make Rogelio happy. Times interest earned. This was a big, whoa. Don't destroy our place, because Southwestern, you know, we're old. Okay. No, just sit down there. Time, thank you. Is that Priscilla? Oh, jeez. Sit down over there, Priscilla. Okay. This is one that Benjamin Graham was very interested in. When you read The Intelligent Investor, you will see he talks quite a bit about times interest earned. We take our earnings before interest and taxes, EBIT, and then you'll see EBITDA, earnings before taxes, depreciation, EBITDA. So earnings before taxes and interest, and divide that by your interest expense. So now, what are we finding out here? We are finding out how many times per year the company earns enough money to pay off its interest. Because if you don't pay your interest debts, what happens? You're in trouble. You're going off the bankruptcy court. So, can you find the earnings before interest and taxes?
Yes.
3464. Everybody see that?
Yes.
Earnings before interest and taxes. Now, can you find the interest expense?
Yes.
$88 million. On $4 billion worth of debt, because interest rates are so low, Walgreens is paying $88 million. And it doesn't sound, $88 million sounds like a lot of money, not on $4 billion. Okay, so what is that?
39.36
times In other words, every about 9 days, every 8 or 9 days, Walgreens earns enough income to pay off its interest payments.
So they earn 88 million 39 times a year?
Yeah, they earn 88 million 39 times a year.
Wow.
So do you think Walgreens is ever in danger of being hauled into bankruptcy court because they can't make their debt payments on their bonds?
No.
Everyone should say no.
No.
What?
No.
If the world ends, then all bets are off, right? If Ebola becomes all the rage, or a meteorite strike, or we have a Republican or a Democrat for our president. Okay. Questions, thoughts? And we're ready for the last one. And that is total debts to total assets. It's the same idea as the debt-to-equity ratio, but this time we're using assets. We're using the entire assets available to the company, and we're using the total liabilities. So what's our total liabilities? Can you find that?
15.
Balance sheet? 15?
226?
And then the total assets was 20? 33462. And it's a respectable. Anything below 50% is great. 45% is great. Okay. Sure.
80 million per year, right?
Right now. Right? This last year, they paid $88 million. Now, if they take on more debt, right, or if they retire debt, that number is going to change as debt is paid off or as debt is added to the balance sheet. And I don't know. I haven't followed them as much as I used to. I used to follow them a lot more a few years ago, but I was really surprised. They had zero long-term debt. And I was often, I could never understand how could this company get so large without borrowing? Because, it costs a lot of money, folks. To drug deal?
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah, well, you think the margins are high on illegal drugs? Yeah, the margins are huge on legal drugs. You know, on illegal drugs, yeah, the margins are high, sure. But on legal drugs, the margins are outrageous. You know, it costs them 2 pennies to make and they sell for $12 a pill. In the case
of the same pills, more expensive here than they are, say, Canada or Mexico.
I don't know if I should say this. Why does a dog lick it?
Because
he can. Because he can, right? Because they can, right? No, that's the truth. Because they can. because the United States is a very interesting. Okay, that's the whole healthcare. That's the whole. We must, as investors, realize that healthcare is a huge percentage of the economy. So as investors, we want to be interested in the opportunities. But at the same time, as citizens, we have to realize that healthcare is bankrupting us. You know, people say people are worried about Social Security going bankrupt. No, Social Security is not going bankrupt. Medicare is going bankrupt. And why is it? We're living longer. We have far more health things that are available. And it's something we got to deal with. We'll see. Because every time we start trying to talk about it, we start screaming and yelling at each other. But that's a different check class, different lecture, different thing. So any questions, any thoughts? Are you excited?
Woo!
Okay, so what's your assignment? Your assignment on the back of the handout, the first handout, is to do that likewise. Pick a company, and I don't care. The reason I picked these five companies is just because they have some interesting characteristics. But you can pick whatever company or companies you want. But don't pick a penny stock. Don't pick a micro cap stock. Pick something big. At least, you know, $5 to $10 billion at least a mid cap stock. But if you really are excited about a small cap stock, go ahead. If it's a bona fide company. In other words, if you want to pick big five. What was their market cap? $335 billion. That's a pretty small company. Go ahead. But I'd rather you pick something big, and so you choose. And then you do that likewise. Okay? Questions? Thoughts? All right, now, previews. He just chugged it. Just to hand out the chapter 7 and 8. Now, dear students, we have done the heavy lifting with regard to our study of stocks. We have learned the characteristics of stocks, what I call the introduction to stocks in chapter 5, and you have an entire spring break. And I'm okay. You need one more. Here it comes. Okay. I am very serious. You're going to spend this spring break every day. Because if you want to take the Series 7, you have to study every day for about 2 months. And I want you to relearn the stuff that you didn't learn in Chapter 5. If you did great on the exam, my apologies. Just do it for review. Then the worksheets for Chapter 6, I want you to do them over and over and over again. There's commentaries, answer keys. Just do them. And if you want to do the bonus assignment for Chapter 6, spend an afternoon in the library. I hope you enjoy it. This is what I do for fun. So I assume everybody enjoys it. And then Chapter 17, isn't this really pretty straightforward?
Yeah,
I think this part, once you do a few, you go, oh, okay, I can do these. And then it's the wisdom that comes with looking at different companies that you can actually say, okay, this is why, and this is good, and that's great, and that's not too smart, and this means I need to do more research. But now we're ready for silliness. We're ready to start looking at the stock price behavior and market efficiency, Chapter 7. And where is it? Chapter 7. And then Chapter 8, Investor Psychology, Behavioral Aspects of Investing. And it's not to say this stuff isn't important. You need to be aware of it. But to try to make money off of it is, it's almost impossible. It means ridiculous. Chapter 7 now. We're looking at Chapter 7. So because we've done, I'm trying to transition. I'm trying to go back in time because you need to keep learning this stuff. If you didn't do well on the exam number 1, exam number 2, exam we just had, you have another chance to take it all over again. Because I'm going to ask you the same questions from Chapter 5. Not all, but it'll be worded differently and the like. But everything about stocks. I'm going to ask you some of the calculations from Chapter 6. Specifically, I want you to be able to do the constant perpetual growth model and the discounted cash flow model. And the worksheets are on the web, right? The worksheets are on Chapter 5. And then you got to be able to do some ratio analysis, but that's straightforward. And now we're going to discuss silliness. Silliness in stock investing. And the truth is, many people take this stuff very, very seriously, so we at least have to be aware about it. But there's some stuff that we can learn, some of the good stuff that we can learn, just about ourselves, just about what it's like to be human, and how that affects investors, and it affects us just in our daily life. And Sir Isaac Newton, have you ever heard of him? You ever heard, remember the apple, and supposedly the apple hit him, and he developed. And he's the one you get to yell at for having to take calculus. He's the guy who developed calculus. He and another guy in Germany at the same base at the same time. And I can calculate the movement of stars, but not the madness of men. And he knew. Because you know what? These credit default swaps and these housing bubbles and internet stocks and Nifty 50 and all the things that happen in modern times, it happened back then. He got caught up in one of the financial picadillos of the time and lost tons of money. What? No, he wasn't involved in the tulips. He was involved in another one that was like the tulips. Not as bad as the tulips. We talked about the tulip bulb craze?
Yeah.
We will. We'll talk about it again. It's in here. Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to start. Let's not do it because I hate to let you go early, don't I? You know what? We're not going to do it. We're not going to let you go early. We're going to do this right now. Okay. But what we're going to do is we're going to discuss all the efficient market theorists and can you beat the market And the truth is, folks, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to beat the market. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't be a good investor. You should. But here, I was supposed to give this out to you in Chapter 5, and I didn't. This is the books to read. Eventually, or the rest of your life, books to read. The one book that you want to read, folks, before you read any other book, because the intelligent investor is pretty rough. You're going to eventually read that. But the one book you want to read is The Wealthy Barber. But that's more about personal finance. But I have that down here, don't I? I have The Wealthy Barber. That's the last three. What? Think and Grow Rich is not bad, but that's not most. That's not all. That's more. That'll be in the last three. Put that down there in the last three, underneath the last three. It's called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And put that down, because that's a pretty good one. But that's more for starting your own business. That's more for, he's really into sales and the like. Yeah, that wouldn't be more for investing. Okay, so the one book you're going to read is One Up on Wall Street. We're going to talk about Peter Lynch in Chapter 7. He was a mutual fund manager, very successful. Over 12 years, ran up 29% a year. Yeah. And when they came out with this book, people thought, this is going to be self-congratulatory, talking about how wonderful and smart he is. And nothing could be different from the truth. He's very down to earth, got a real wry sense of humor, and he really makes a good argument for why you should invest in stocks if it is appropriate for you, and how you should invest in stocks. And he says, because you're out in the real world, not on the 25th floor of some investment firm on Wall Street, you have one up on Wall Street. Understand? So you want to read that. Then another one that's a lot of fun is called A Random Walk Down Wall Street, and we're going to discuss some of the material from that in this chapter. But eventually, and I steal from this guy often. You'll see, Mr. Malkiel, Professor Malkiel, I steal from him because he's got great quotes. But the one you're going to want to read eventually, it's kind of tough because he writes in a very dense. His prose, his writing is kind of dense. So yet sometimes pick it out. But it's called The Intelligent Investor. And this is the gentleman who was the teacher for Warren Buffett. You want to find the 2002 version that has commentary by Jason Zweig. Because Jason Zweig is a great writer, Wall Street Journal, other media. And what he does after every chapter is he has a commentary. He says, okay, this is what Mr. Graham said. So he explains it to you in a summary and a review in more easy to understand language. Then the next book, which is very difficult, is more graduate level book. That's the book that's called Security Analysis by Mr. Graham and his cohort, David Dodd. It's tough. And this is what you would see. This is the kind of stuff you see in a graduate level class. But remember when we did the Chapter 6 discounted cash flow? That's the essence of what's in the security analysis book. So later. Wall Street People is a great storybook. It talks about people who were in the industry, and that's where when I read from about John Merriweather and John Gutfreund, that's from that book. A lot of fun. Beating the Street. Peter Lynch wrote One Up on Wall Street twice. The second one is called Beating the Street, and he goes into more detail about what he does, but it's basically the same book. He then was asked by the National Association of Investors Corp. to write a how-to manual, turn One Up on Wall Street into a how-to manual, and that's what Learn to Earn is, a beginner's guide to investing in business. So they're all three of the same book, but they're just nuanced differently. Now, if you want to see what it was like to invest 30, 40 years ago before the internet, read How to Make Money in Wall Street. A lot of fun. I steal some of the jokes from Mr. Rukeyser. He used to have a television show for over 30 years. He passed away a few years ago. A lot of fun. And then here is the tulip bulb. The next book, Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. Eventually, you're going to want to read this book. It was written in 1840. And it's still shocking. how insane humans really are. We are not rational. We are nuts. Extraordinary popular delusions and the madness of crowds. This is the tulip bulbs. And the witch trials, and the crusades, and the South Sea Islands, and the all these other ridiculous things that millions of people believed in and turned out to be extraordinary popular delusions and resulting in madness. Yes, the housing bubble, the internet stocks, weapons of mass deception. And now the next three are not really investing books per se, but they're good for personal finance. The Wealthy Barber, The Millionaire Next Door, and then the Think and Grow Rich. But The Hero with a Thousand Faces is something completely different. I just threw it in there just to hopefully maybe you'll pick it up someday and learn how to be a human being. All right, when we come back, chapter 7, we will discuss how, if you can, beat the market. All right, who snuck in late? And Benjamin, don't go away. William and Bobier, Benjamin Cote is here. Now, did you get one for today? Did you get the handouts for today? William, did you get the handouts for today? Okay. Victor, no. Eduardo McCoy, yes. Oh, this is Eduardo Maldonado, isn't it? I think so. All right, who snuck? Wait, turn this off.